Welcome back to another edition of the Daily Dots here on Thursday, May 9th. I'll run through the markets and then I have two, maybe three things that I'll dive into that I found interesting on the day, as we have very boring data all week. S&P finished up about 0.5%. NASDAQ 100.22. But I will note on that small 0.22, we are kind of starting to break above the little downtrend line we've had in the last couple weeks of this pullback. So S&P is already above its downtrend line, looking really good. Now the Qs are trying to do the same. Small caps up 1% on the day. They seem to enjoy the pop in jobless claims this morning. The Dow, which we don't talk about, but I'm going to tell you anyway, was up about 0.9, so had a good day. Really the same thing for equal weight, 0.85. With that said, Mag 7 actually flat on the day at down 0.02. So 2 days in a row now, I think it was, that you had equal weight kind of beat Magnificent 7 by a good bit. Volatility doing what volatility does. It's no longer a teenager. It's under 13. The dollar was actually down 0.27, which is a pretty big move. We were actually up on the day, and I figured same thing. It's probably the jobless claims data. I've noticed definitely a lot of people are starting to get concerned that we're hitting a soft patch here, that recession risks are, you know, now that everyone forgot about them, maybe they're creeping back up. There's just a lot of those vibes out there. So not surprising that a soft data point, even though it really wasn't that bad, and I'll get into that later, you know, brought bond yields and the dollar down on the day. Oil up 0.78. Nat gas was up almost 6% on front month. It's like really perking up here. The storage report was better than expected today. It looks like the growth in storage versus the 5-year average is finally maybe peaking out. Power generation demand is very, very good right now. And if we get some significant heat this summer, which I fully expect we will, power generation can be substantial over the summer. So I think you can see a lot there. And if I get into the utility stuff here later, I'll maybe have a little bit more to say on natural gas's role there. Gold up 1.26%. So a nice day for precious metals. And then I'll just kind of finish up here with the actual Mag 7. NVIDIA and Tesla both down over 1%, almost 2% for NVIDIA. And on the flip side, you had Google, Meta, Microsoft, and Apple all green. So kind of typical of what we've seen here of late, with Tesla kind of being the only one to like really feel pain. And then NVIDIA down for two out of the last 3 days, but it's still pretty close to the recent high. All right, that's enough for markets for the day. I mentioned claims earlier that it was kind of moving rates in the dollar. So you did have a nice little pop in initial claims. Now you've gone from being right around 210, 212 to 230. So pretty substantial jump. It was a 22,000 jump week over week, which seems like a lot. But if you kind of look back historically, we're still at just shockingly low numbers. And this print specifically was mostly California and New York having big jumps since last week. So naturally, I dug in to see how all the states did and then dug into New York and California specifically. And when you look at them, like, there's nothing alarming about their levels or even the weekly change versus what's normal for them, especially New York. New York is very volatile. It has big moves up, big moves down. So I didn't find any of that particularly alarming. The one thing I will note that was actual softness to me, unlike those two states, was Illinois and Indiana. And both states cited manufacturing layoffs, and Illinois cited construction layoffs, which I don't have to tell you for the millionth time why I think that's important. But so I took that to heart. But broadly speaking, the report, I mean, the 4-week average is still lower than it was this time last year. So there's still very, very low claims. So sure, put a pin in it and we'll see what happens the next few weeks to see if this is a new trend or it was just kind of noise. But honestly, even if you're trending at 230, 240, 250, like, that, you can do that without being in a recession, no problem. So I would urge caution to anyone that's getting excited about jobless claims moving from 210 to 230. But it's the first time it's been 230 since August, I think it was, of last year. So it's not nothing, but I think some folks are getting carried away. The second thing I wanted to talk about is very interesting, and I owe my buddy Paolo for this, who I think owes Les Shrub, who was just on Zach's Friday show not too long ago, for this, because I hadn't seen it yet. But Freddie Mac is actually trying to get the ability to do second mortgages. That's obviously important because Freddie Mac is the, you know, has government guarantees at their back. So if they were to do second mortgages, which think of as a home equity loan essentially against your house, so a way to tap your equity by taking out a second mortgage, and a lot of those that are on the market already, they make you kind of refi the whole thing under the new rate, which obviously for almost every mortgage out there is not attractive because the new rates are very high. This one would not do that, so you would, you know, say your first mortgage is at 3% and you want to take out a $50,000 home equity, you know, second mortgage to consolidate debt or to, you know, have some fun, whatever the case may be, do some housing projects. You would get that at the new rate, but your old one would just stay stuck at its old rate. I think this is probably significant because, so even in their application, the kind of like paper they put together about this, they modeled out, you know, 7.5% rate on this. So let's say it's 7 to 9%. Well, that is lower than obviously credit card debt. It is lower than a lot of auto loans right now. It is lower than essentially every consumer loan I know about. So you would be kind of opening the tap to home equity again, because there is a shocking amount of home equity in America that isn't being tapped, and largely because rates are high, that all of a sudden might look to do that because the rate makes sense. The fact that they're guaranteed means, and they can be securitized means, you know, the demand for it, people to buy these loans is going to be there. And obviously the demand from households would be there to be able to, you know, affordably tap into equity in order to consolidate higher interest rate debt and to, for some people, just kick the can down the road on their debt. That's not to say they're super easy lending standards on this, because it's not going to be. But if this does happen and they don't even really need, you know, a new law or official approval, to my understanding, to even make this happen. So you could have this, I want to say I read somewhere coming by the fall. So come fall, you could have people taking out loans. And this is only Freddie Mac, but that could extend to Ginnie Mae, as well as Fannie. So this could be pretty big stimulus is the moral of the story, that you could have a new kind of quasi-private, quasi-public sector stimulus for consumption. And obviously with the little soft patch kind of data I just mentioned, like, it might be well-timed for what could have been an organic slowdown to kind of breathe life, a little bit of life, at least back into the consumer, which is essentially, you know, where most of our growth comes from. The other thing I'll talk about quickly, because that didn't take too long to get through those two, is utilities. Like, Zach and I have been kind of talking about this a little bit, but we've never really gone into any detail. At Bulwark, we do have a basket of utilities, and it's kind of an interesting theme. But I will say a lot of the names in general, and a lot of the names we own both, like, they've gone straight up in recent weeks. It went from being something that no one was talking about to something that has gotten some, it's hitting the airwaves now. Like, people are noticing, the media is talking about it, investors all of a sudden are talking about it. So I do think it's important to note that anyone that's kind of brand new to this one, like, it's gotten frothy. Like, if you look at the utilities ETF, it looks kind of overbought. It, like, the number of members of the utility sector that are, like, you know, above their 200-day moving average, 50-day moving average, things like that, they're all just, like, really high. So this thing probably needs to consolidate at some point in the near future. But for us, the whole thing's, like, pretty simple. Like, you had all this legislation that created a lot of new factories, a lot of new manufacturing. And then, of course, we had ChatGPT hit last year, and that has created, you know, this massive scramble for AI, which is obviously going to come with a massive scramble for data centers that can support that. So we're seeing those things, and those things need a ton of electricity. Factories need a lot of electricity. Data centers need a shocking amount of electricity. Electric vehicles need a lot of electricity. There's a lot of new appliances that run on electricity that used to run on fossil fuels. Like, they need a lot of electricity. You get the point. We need more power. And if you look at the last decade, like, electricity usage hasn't really moved. But now all of a sudden it's on the move, and it's happening at a really substantial clip. Every time the EIA looks at this, every time, you know, states and cities that have to, and utilities that provide power, look at their numbers, they have to revise it higher basically every time, especially in places like Georgia and Atlanta, where people are going because the power is cheap and efficient. There's new nuclear reactors online in Georgia that kind of allow for, you know, really reliable, efficient, cheap, clean energy. And all these data center companies, they don't want to go hook into a coal plant. They absolutely want to go hook into clean energy. But if you're a data center hooking into wind and solar, like, just isn't that ideal. You need baseload power. You need it always on. So unless you feel like dealing with the battery issue, either at the grid scale or yourself, it's just not a great solution. So it's just kind of a natural marriage between big tech and nuclear at the moment. And I think you're seeing that you're definitely seeing that. There's a lot of data centers looking to build adjacent to nuclear plants, looking to have their own microgrids that include micro reactors for nuclear. Obviously, there's plenty of talk about small modular reactors in the future, but there's also all of a sudden a lot of talk about building big nuclear plants again. Like, that is a very real thing that's going to happen, probably going to happen sooner than people think. I think it will happen. I think the ability to actually build those out and to have them happen kind of at a reasonable cost and schedule is going to surprise people. And if I'm right on that, then it'll just get that much more popular. And right now, if you're like a mayor of a old Midwestern town that got kind of hollowed out when we deindustrialized, this reindustrialization really is an opportunity for you to have substantial economic development. And no kidding, if you have the power, like, they will come. Like, these people will go anywhere that they have the power. So building nuclear power right now, if you do it, that gives you a bunch of high paying good jobs. But then on the backside of it, if you build one, you can pretty much guarantee you're going to get data centers coming with it, which obviously also provide some decent jobs. But I'll run you through some of the shocking, like, statistics on this and data to give you like a picture of where we are, where we're heading, and in the implications. So currently the US produces about 425 terawatt hours of power from wind and solar. From wind, and 165 from solar. So 590 terawatt hours between wind and solar. You're going to need almost that much just for data centers here in about a decade. And that takes about, and this is, these are rough numbers, don't get me wrong, that takes roughly 10 million acres of land for that wind and solar. And clearly that has pretty significant impacts on the local ecosystems. Something that no one wants to talk about, but if you use shocking amounts of land for wind and solar, and then you have to move shocking amounts of earth to get all of the resources required to build wind and solar, like, it's not even close to being, you know, good for the environment. On the flip side, nuclear produces currently 772 terawatt hours. So a good bit more, at least at the moment, than wind and solar, but it only uses about 50,000 acres. So 50,000 acres versus 10 million. So as we scale up the grid to support AI, like, if you want to reduce the massive impact on the ecosystem, on the environment, however you want to look at it, and all this material mining, nuclear becomes really popular. It becomes really necessary, I would argue. It, to really put it into perspective, if nuclear used the current U.S. wind and solar footprint, so the land use, it would generate about 6 times the entire world's electricity needs. So that, this, I mean, to me, that just shows you like the land use unsustainability of wind and solar. I will say, though, battery usage is becoming substantial in places like California, grid scale batteries, that is making especially solar just like much more viable than it was. I say 5 years from now, it will be significantly more viable than it was 5 years ago, thanks to battery storage being able to spread the power out, especially through peak time in the evening after the sun goes down. When you think of land use, you can kind of use New York City as a good gauge here. So nuclear power would be Central Park, solar power would be Brooklyn, and wind power would be all of New York City. So it kind of puts in perspective like what you're dealing with. And now all of a sudden you're chasing your tail, trying to build shocking amounts of new electricity capacity to, you know, sustain the AI race and the reindustrialization of the country. That land use becomes like a pretty big bottleneck and a very serious thing for policymakers to start thinking about more deeply. Another crazy stat: Microsoft alone, just Microsoft, they open a new data center every 3 days around the world. Now that's globally, not just in the U.S., but to put this into context, their data centers use about 70 million megawatt hours of power, which is about the same as 7 million homes, which is 18% of American homes. So currently, just Microsoft is using the same power as 18% of American homes. And if you think, obviously, Microsoft is one little cog in this wheel. So you throw in all of the other big tech companies and everyone else that's in this space, it uses a lot of electricity. There's a new one opening up in Wisconsin, and I think I read it uses the same as like 35,000 homes, something like that, just one data center. So being able to power all of these is not going to be easy whatsoever. And that is why utilities all of a sudden become interesting. Utilities are considered a defensive sector. They do well when everything goes bad because they always make money. They always pay a dividend, most of them. It's just like a kind of like a steady way to do things. Like people, whenever, you know, you go into a recession, a lot of people will stop buying, you know, fancy toilet paper. They'll start going to maybe McDonald's instead of Chipotle or something like that. But people aren't, you know, usually going to turn the lights off. And that's one of the reasons it's traditionally a defensive sector. And as a yield proxy, they have a lot of debt and they pay big dividends, so they become sort of like a bond proxy. And bonds, at least historically, have done well in recessions. So when people see a recession coming, like to jump into that. But now all of a sudden, like, it still has those characteristics, although I would argue some of them less so. But also now it's suddenly like awkwardly a growth industry, which is something, at least in my career, never really seen that. Never seen utilities all of a sudden having a bunch of earnings growth and revenue growth. Not to mention they're getting, you know, significant subsidies from local, state, federal government in order to build new electricity production. Going back to nuclear, if you do it the right way, the way the government wants you to do it, they'll basically give you a 50% tax credit to cover the cost of building a reactor. So that's pretty substantial subsidy. So, and there's a lot of those that go into transmission and distribution, like massive subsidies. So in a sense, the government's helping pay for the huge capex and build out that's required. But then, you know, at the end of this, these utilities have a lot more ratepayers, a lot more power to sell. So it's kind of difficult to figure out how much they're worth because, well, all of a sudden they have a lot of earnings growth that we've never really seen. So it just makes a very interesting sector, this weird, you know, defensive play that might be becoming a little bit offensive. But I will close by saying, remember what I said at the beginning of that conversation, like a lot of this stuff's gone straight up. So nothing we're talking about here is investment advice at all. just something very interesting kind of underneath the surface of the market that we're not used to. And I don't think enough people were paying attention to. So for what it's worth. All right. I think we'll be back tomorrow with a episode that Zach has recorded for you. And then I'll be back with you next week. Cheers.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.